Welcome to the Medical Travel Show with your hosts, Elizabeth Ziemba and Irving Stackpole.
Welcome to the Medical Travel Show, a forum for ideas, challenges, and benefits for global healthcare services. This is Elizabeth Ziemba, and I'm here today with my co-host, Irving Stackpole.
Thank you, Elizabeth. It's great to be here. We have a terrific guest joining us today. Jacques von Speyer is the CEO of U.S. Telemedicine and the first American member qualified to collaborate and partner on FP7 telemedicine projects in Europe. U.S. Telemedicine is based in Monarch Beach, California, and is a leading provider of telemedicine platforms to self-funded corporations in the United States as well as state governments. Welcome, Jacques.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be here.
Yes, thank you for joining us on the Medical Travel Show. And perhaps we can start by just having you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got interested in the wild world of medical travel, and a bit about your company.
Certainly. U.S. Telemedicine has been a provider of telehealth and telemedicine services in the United States for about 9 years now. And originally, the corporation began in the U.S. with brick-and-mortar healthcare facilities in California and Nevada. And soon realized that that experience was really not something we relished. The people were constantly coming back. Certainly in the Nevada parts, they were coming in from far places to receive primary care. And then, of course, the concept of telehealth came in, and we began building our telemedicine construct and have been doing so since then. We've expanded to 42 states across the United States and offer both teleconsult via video, via audio telephone, and sometimes even using Skype when it works in order to provide primary care. We don't market to the general public, but rather to hospitals and doctor groups and state organizations, as Irving had mentioned, who are our clients, and then we, of course, treat their patients. And that's U.S. telemedicine.
So the opportunity in telemedicine to reach across distances, of course, is self-evident, and for anybody that's been involved in healthcare a long time, many of us have wondered why this hasn't achieved a higher level of penetration, why more doctors, more hospitals, more clinics, more providers aren't using telemedicine, telehealth tools to secure second opinions, to get consults from subject matter experts. Why isn't this more widely used, Jacques?
There are two answers. There's the politically correct answer and then the correct answer. The politically correct answer simply says, oh, it is happening, it is building, it's fighting the status quo, and anytime change or something new happens, then of course it's an uphill battle. And that's the politically correct answer. The politically incorrect answer simply says that telemedicine saves a tremendous amount of money. And we're approaching $3 trillion in healthcare in the United States. With telemedicine, that would be reduced substantially. But if it's reduced, then the stakeholders who are invested, who prosper from this $3 trillion, would probably object to it. And one of the biggest, objectors to telemedicine are insurance companies themselves. They seem to feel that telemedicine will relieve their own network of physicians of revenue, of income, and their primary concern is to take care of their network, their physicians, insurance companies. It's they're basically brokers. They themselves don't do anything other than introduce you to a hospital or to a doctor, and that's their primary purpose. And so in doing that, they wish to protect their own clientele and the ones that keep them in business, which are the various providers. And that's basically what it is. People chat about wanting to reduce costs, reduce spending, reduce the associated GDP number of healthcare, but yet it's not happening because the desire is truly not there, other than than voicing the opinion. Nothing is really done toward it. And you know, we don't know what the outcome will be. Slowly, there is some adoption here and there. So one of the questions we ask in telemedicine is, do we have to wait until the whole thing collapses, until we become 18% of the GDP, which is unsustainable? And at that point, will they then turn to telehealth? Countries such as, Switzerland, certainly Belgium, the Netherlands, and others, and even the UK with their 211 dial-in to talk to a telenurse or a teledoctor, have each shown somewhere between 11.5% to 18% revenue reduction, which means toward the healthcare providers, but that's also then cost savings to the actual payers. And that's something that hasn't caught on in the U.S. yet.
Well, certainly, it's hard to turn the Queen Mary around in a bathtub. In the U.S. healthcare system, it's $2.8 trillion as we sit here. And it is indeed difficult to turn it around. There are a lot of legacy interests installed and invested interests. With insurance companies being the risk managed, they're in the risk management business. One would think that while telemedicine, telehealth might introduce some issues of remote liability or risk, it would also significantly reduce risks. Because if you've got a practitioner in Taos, New Mexico, who only sees a particular neurophysiological manifestation of something, the last time she saw it was in medical school 12 years ago, wouldn't it seem to be logical that she could then dial up a regional center in Reno or Las Vegas or even in San Diego where a resident in neuromuscular disorder could be consulted?
That's how it should work. What you're describing is a framework of that we're seeing more in places such as Africa and Asia than we are in the United States. And that individual provider in New Mexico might well call someone that's only within their network with regard to their billing, of course, is covered. And that's where the issues come in. What you're chatting about is the optimal, of course, is having a what they're doing in Africa very much is building regional hospitals and then the various satellites that move out into the rural areas, and those hospitals act as the main conduit and the source of information, as you said, for practitioners that aren't familiar with something or have never been confronted with something. And that works very nicely. And of course, there's a single payer system in most of Africa. So that component is no longer there with regard to income and profits and things of that nature, which oftentimes stymie the growth of the telemedicine.
Right.
Well, I don't think we should be constrained by being politically correct. We don't have to be politically offensive, but politically correct doesn't achieve.
You've never stopped before, Elizabeth.
Well, I don't think I'll start now. the idea behind our program is to have some open discussions and the exchange of ideas and information about what's going on. So, since the passage of the Affordable Care Act, or what people often refer to as Obamacare, have you seen that legislation having an impact on your business? Certainly what we hear a lot about in the medical tourism, medical travel sector is that now self-funded plans are turning to a medical travel option as a way for cost reduction. And of course, we don't have any data to actually support that contention. Are you seeing that there's an increase of self-funded employers in the United States? And are they interested in telemedicine as a solution for cost reduction and improved access to quality medicine?
I would say the savvy ones are, and unfortunately for the industry, there aren't many. And again, it's because of legacy, invested interest, and stakeholders and all of that. But there are those that are sending people to other countries and other areas for procedures. They're not many of them. but they certainly are there. I would think that the larger the corporations, some of the box retail stores that have more than 100,000 employees and so forth, and you know, have a yearly budget of between $500 million to $1 billion, depending on the population, are certainly interested in saving funds. But most of them operate through TPAs, and the TPAs themselves, you're back to supporting their right. network of doctors within the U.S. And so oftentimes it's snake eat snake, and you're not going to get out of the circle. Very few employers are doing it. Some are. We hope that more do. It's a wise choice.
Picking up on... go ahead.
No, I'm saying that in chatting with a lot of them, they say, oh my God, am I going to send someone to the Philippines, or I'm going to send someone to Indonesia or wherever? And you have to remind them that, you know, one of the benefits of telemedicine is that we're standardized beings. We're people that react the same to the same types of diseases. If you have diabetes, the treatment for diabetes is pretty much universal, whether you're in Australia or in the United States or in Europe or wherever. And true for a lot of functions of the human physiology. So if you have a cold, your chest constricts, whether you're in China or in South America. And therefore, that type of care can be provided in the same in surgical fashion. Whatever surgeries are required are pretty much taught the same manner around the world. Mm-hmm. So why not take advantage of that? And, of course, it then falls back on the TPA itself.
Right. So the TPA is a weird intermediator of health payments and managing utilization in the environment. And third-party administrators, or TPAs, are often insurance companies themselves. So they carry the same baggage, the same resistance to change, and the same skeptical right. actuarial types of perspectives as do insurance companies. The shift under the Affordable Care Act, which I believe is going to be more widely adopted, and interestingly, the self-employed sector will probably be the last to join this. But the shift from volume, traditional fee-for-service medicine as it's been practiced in the United States now for an awfully long time, to value, where payments for a single episode are made and then the providers are able to, if possible, to retain some proportion of the difference between what it actually costs them to provide the service, even though anecdotally or parenthetically, a lot of them don't even really know what it costs them to provide the service.
Well,
won't this shift from volume to value help technologies like telemedicine, telehealth, to gain a footing as a tool?
Theoretically, yes. But you know, a lot of things happen in theory and don't translate very easily into actual practice.
Right.
So let's say the ACOs. You know, ACO is an animal that was built by Obamacare. It's basically sort of a rehashed HMO, if you will. And within the tenets of the ACOs, they have something called the NSSRP, which actually is codified to use telemedicine. And they promote the use of telehealth in order to reduce costs, in order to bring in meaningful use, as you were just referring to a moment ago.
Right.
But that simply hasn't happened. In fact, most ACOs aren't doing very well at all. But that hasn't happened. That shift, that reduction of cost hasn't happened at all. And while theoretically it sounds great, looks good on paper, it's utopian in its concept, but the rollout simply is stymied because you're falling again into the system where doctors are looking for certain reimbursement. They're not that interested. Well, let's save money and I'll get a piece of it at the end. They'd rather have their full revenue stream immediately. And so that hasn't been very successful, even though it's codified and it's pushed by Obamacare. So I think you're back to the same end. It's like tempting Joey to eat a horrible soup, a vegetable soup, and then dressing it in different ways and presenting it. And it ends up being the same. It's unfortunate. It's very unfortunate. But that's what we see.
Well, let's step away from the discussion about the depressing American healthcare system. And when Irving did his introduction for you, he mentioned that your company is a collaborator and a partner on FP7 telemedicine projects in Europe. And when he said that, I had a quizzical look on my face because I have no idea what that means. So could you explain what that is?
Sure. FP7 is a certain platform of excellence, of promotion of technology with combined with healthcare. It's operated by CORDIS, which is the CORDIS, which is the European scientific arm that deals with most issues of technology and healthcare and science and all of that. And they want to promote relationships and excellence using telehealth and telemedicine. They're doing an excellent job. They've gone further. They've combined their efforts with WHO and are doing excellent programs. In fact, one of our board members is and who's also chief of the Nelson Mandela School of Medicine in Cape Town is now chairman of the telehealth part of CORDIS and the World Health Organization, and they're prompting it. They're promoting it around the world in Vietnam and in China and you know, in disparate places. They seem to be having a much more success than here. Admittedly, a lot of their success is self-funded, and so they'll come to emerging nations or you know, non-aligned countries and offer them X amount of dollars and X amount of systems, and nobody says no to that. And so that seems to be catching on rather well. Of course, nobody's going to come to the United States and do it. We have our own funds. We don't need the World Health Organization. And that's the platform. That's the FP7 platform. And it's a combination of most of the scientific institutions in Europe, certainly a preponderance of the healthcare providers, facilities, hospitals, laboratories, research centers, all combined into one milieu of trying to move forward and using telemedicine as a fulcrum to do it.
Well, this has certainly been a very interesting discussion, and I feel like we've only just touched on a few key issues. So I hope that at some point in the near future, we'll be able to continue the discussion with you. But in the meantime, would you please tell our listeners how they could be in touch with you?
Certainly. They can reach at CEO, Chief Executive Officer, CEO, at U.S. Telemedicine. Simple enough. We're happy to receive emails and help listeners with regard to telemedicine and the travel industry, which we feel is so important. We'd love to be able to explain it to individuals how travel. And in fact, we've opened a site called Telemedical. What is it called? Telemedical Tourism. And telemedical tourism talks about the ability of an individual going to the Philippines and having a procedure, coming back to the United States and having follow-up care with doctors in the U.S. through telemedicine, whether it's plastic surgery or some sort of invasive surgery or anything else. And we do it based on an EMR, electronic medical record platform, that we provide to the hospital in the Philippines, so that the doctors in the Philippines can record and memorialize all of the procedures, all of the movement, the drugs, everything that happened. When the patient comes back, the local doctor also has access to that same EMR. So there's no issue with regard to a patient coming back with all the documents, which oftentimes does not happen, an understanding of the follow-up physician in the U.S. as to what really occurred there. And all that now goes by the wayside with regards to telemedicine.
Right.
Certainly for, you know, plastic surgery is great. We do a video consult and really know. And it allows the patient the comfort to know that their doctor, the attending physician thousands of miles away, is really in electronic touch with them through a U.S.-based physician. And that's a tremendous amount of comfort. And also as far as prognosis and healing and all of that, it adds a tremendous quality.
Sounds like a great service. We want to thank Jacques Van Speyer, our guest today, for being with us on the Medical Travel Show, and we want to thank our listeners.
And thank you. You've been listening to the Medical Travel Show, a forum for ideas, challenges, and benefits for global healthcare services. Please look for us on Facebook and Twitter, and thank you for listening.
Thank you both for the opportunity of chatting and talking to your audience. I've enjoyed it. And appreciate everything you're doing to promote health travel. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jacques.